Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
Yep, the first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race that you've ever experienced.
And the second is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 14th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there with you to help celebrate.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at our website, theultrarunningguys.com, or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode, and remember, when in doubt, just show up.
I basically was told I didn't have time to stop and to just go. That was kind of unsettling. I was like, oh man, because again, my watch was completely dead for this whole lap. I was asking Carlita, I was like, are we going to finish? Like, are we doing okay on time? And she kind of modestly says, well, you could always be going faster. I was like, okay. I was like, oh man.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. If you are new, welcome. We are so grateful that you stopped by. And if you're finding the value, please share with your friends. Give us the like, the follow, and we would absolutely love a review. And if you're back, your family, we appreciate you so much. As always, we're going to get straight into the guest. So our guest tonight seems like he is just about everywhere. A quick scroll through Strava or socials and you will see him running, hiking, rock climbing, skiing, pacing, crewing, sweeping a course, and maybe even mountain biking, usually with friends, some of which he probably just met that day. And although he's already racked up approximately 30 ultra distances since accomplishing his first in 2019, he appears to be just getting warmed up. So as we record this, he is gearing up to take on the grueling Georgia Death Race, after which he's on a personal mission to find the hardest 50K in the U.S. with targets like Quest for the Crest 50K, Speed Goat 50K, and the Barkley Fall Classic lined up in the schedule. So stick around while we chat about how he defines success, why he doesn't believe in failure, and why the ultra community is simply the best. And with that, Scott Perry, welcome to the show, man.
Awesome. Pleasure to be here, you guys.
Well, look, this is exciting. We were talking before the show. We've been connected for quite a while and, you know, kind of in passing. I got a chance to meet you in January at Southern Tour and witness some cool stuff that I'm sure we'll touch on. But I think this has kind of been a long time coming. But lots to talk about, as we just touched.
Oh, yeah.
So this is interesting, man. A lot of times we go back and we're going to get into this and we kind of start with like, hey, how did you get started? But dude, like I mentioned, you're kind of everywhere doing all kinds of things. So yes, we want to get into that background, but the first question that I have for you is, why do you run?
Oh, running to me is just like, you know, I feel honored to be able to do it, for one, to be able to just go out, strap on some shoes and go for as little or as long as I want. It's just, it's eye-opening. If I hadn't found running, I don't really know where I would be right now. It certainly opened the doors to other possibilities, to other adventures outdoors, like you mentioned, some climbing, some skiing, some mountain biking here and there every now and then. It's just an absolute honor. There's hardly really any place I'd rather be than exploring some mountains, the crispness, the coolness of the air, the breathtaking beauty, the peace and tranquility of the mountains. It's just so much fun, so much pleasure to be out and engulfed in it all. And the community too, that's kind of what keeps me going.
It's funny though that you said that, because so I'm listening to you as you describe why you like to run, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, you have described the Scott that I know today, the Scott that is hanging out on the side of a mountain, trying to run these incredible elevation and just always being out on trails and stuff. That's not how you got started in running, is it?
Not at by any means, no. I started off pretty in a unconventional way, if you'd like to call it that. I don't exactly know what coerced me to have the decision, but I had the thought of wanting to run 50 miles in a month. Prior to that, I had only done the required 15 minutes of running at the physical education class in like high school every 2 weeks. And I actually vividly remember those 15 minutes and how much they absolutely sucked and how much I was not looking forward to them. So yeah, it's, I just had this thought one morning. I was like, I want to run 50 miles in the month of October. So I did just 2 miles a day, 25 days out of the 31 of October. And that was basically it. I never had the intention of wanting to do a 5K. I didn't honestly even know what that was at the time. It was just 2 miles a day. There was a block right from my front doorstep that I would do. If the weather was bad or I just wasn't feeling it, I would go on the treadmill, 2 miles. And so that ended in October. And it wasn't really until the next year that I was like, well, you know what? This is kind of fun. I guess it's healthy. It gets me outside. So let's go 2.5 miles. Mm-hmm. And so I did that 2 mile loop. And I remember, again, vividly, I remember going out just a quarter mile more. And it was like the craziest feeling to go 2.5. And then so a couple weeks later, February 9th, I did my first 5K right here in Raleigh. It was the Run for the Roses 5K. If you look back at those photos, you could tell I had obviously no clue what I was doing. Classic mistakes. I had like long sweatpants. I had the wearing the race shirt. I was actually wearing the race shirt over another shirt. I look back at these pictures and I'm like, man, it's crazy to see where I've come from and where I am now. And then so after the 5K, I kind of got hooked and I downloaded myself like a 10K training plan. And then I found a half marathon training plan. And not too long after that, in November of 2018, I found the Raleigh Trail Runners, also hosting most of their events in Umstead State Park. And that sort of got me into trail running. And from that initial meeting between the camaraderie, the social part of everything, the friends, how quickly and easy it was to make friends, I soon diverted all my attention towards the trails. And once that kicked off, then came the distance, then came the crazy stuff that I'm into doing now. And then each new distance, it was just like eye-opening. It's like, man, I got to my new benchmark, my new distance, my new furthest distance. And especially when I hit that first time, 50 miles in a week, it brought me back to that first time when I did 50 miles in a month. And now, fast forward even more years, I did my first 100-mile race, which was absolutely insane. I'm sure we'll touch on that here shortly. And then now, as you mentioned, doing GDR, which is about 74, 75, who knows how many miles. And that will now be the second longest race I've done since the 100. And so that whole progression from just 2 miles at one point to the 2.5 miles to now saying, oh yeah, guys, in 10 days, I'm going to do 75 all at once. Like, it's just kind of crazy to think back over that progression of just 10 years, really, of what I've dedicated to the sport.
So much that I love.
We both want to jump in.
I know.
First.
So one point of clarification, because this is the way I pictured it, but I'm not sure. So you did the 2 miles a day in October to get you 50. Did you continue that through January, or did you take a break and then in January said, I'm going to go run further?
Oh yeah, I completely stopped. It was never really a goal of mine to do a 5K or become a runner. It was just 50 miles in a month, check that off the list, and then it kind of just died with that. So yeah, it wasn't until January that I picked it back up again.
Well, it's just interesting because that it was like that 2 mile though still had such a hook in this is what's normal, that even though a few months later when you did more than that, it sounds like it made such an impact on you and then the progression along the way. And this is one of the things that for people that are listening, I think it's really important because we've had guests that seemingly go from couch to 200 miler. Yep. Right? In like a year or 2 years.
And we're all mad.
What's that?
We all end up being mad.
Right, right. And usually, as you can tell, when we dig in, there, a lot of times there's foundations and reasons that are able to do that. But I love this, man, the way you're just like, okay, let's see what the next thing is and what the next thing is. And you've had this span of time where you kind of just enjoyed, but also tested kind of the next piece and got that milestone. I'm going to turn it over to you in a second. But the one question I had is, the 5K. Dude, I remember my first 5K and I felt like that in your 15 minutes that you were talking about. I just remember being like, oh my God, this is so terrible. But you said you were hooked. What was it about that 5K? Was it the event itself? Was it completing the distance? Like, what hooked you?
the course wasn't necessarily fond of mine at the time. It was a hilly per se 5K that I wasn't used to running on when I would do the 2 miles. But I think what attributed that race and honestly a lot of the stuff even up till now is my pacing progression of it. I paced it like the most perfect way I knew how then. And I mean, I would sort of try and do the same. It just go out easy. And this is also very ultra mindset now that I think back about it. Go out easy and sustainable, make it fun. The middle is where you can push. And then the end is where you just hang on. And so when I finished, I was like sprint finish. It was the most amazing part of the event because I was able to fulfill that race all the way up until the end. And I was like, whoa, this is just really fun.
That's cool. The thing that I will echo then with what you said is the stepwise progression that you demonstrate is, it's a breath of fresh air, probably for a lot of listeners, because it's how a lot of people get involved in running and they progress to their first half, their first marathon. Then they're like, well, maybe I'll try the 50K, and they start expanding that horizon of what they think is possible. And so I think you demonstrate that is it's good for people to hear that. And when you talk about your first 5K, wearing your sweats and the race t-shirts and all this stuff, we laugh because we've all done that, yeah. Right? And yeah. We're all like, you know, I'm modeling the race because I'm just so proud to be a part of it. I can't believe I'm actually doing this event. And so kudos to you. And I just think it's great that you share because I think it resonates with a lot of listeners. For you personally, just out of curiosity, did you approach these steps like this as almost like laying bricks of proving to yourself that you could do that distance and that's why you went to the next distance above it? Did you need to have the stepwise, or do you think it could have been a couch to 200? Or from a confidence standpoint, is that why you preferred to step up?
See, it's interesting that you ask that because thinking back to those incremental stepping stones, like 50 to it, like odd races, like 31 miles to 35 miles to 37 miles to 40. Like, there's not too many races that give you that opportunity. I decided to do it that way, but I was always drawn to the more difficult of those distances. It wasn't just like, okay, let me pick the easiest 50K, the easiest 40 mile, or the easiest of the next distance. I was always pushing myself to the absolute hardest race I could find of the distance because I sort of knew I could do it. But what I enjoyed the most was having the appreciation of achieving that next goal, each incremental step all the way up. If you had gone, or if I had gone from couch to 100 mile, you'd skip all of those little, oh, this is my first 50K, first 40 miles, first 45 miles, first 50 miles. And with each of those milestones, it just made me more invested, more hooked, and more appreciative of what ultra running is.
And I know we talk about Goggins a lot, but he had this idea in his book about the whole cookie jar, that you have these victories and these wins and stuff that you pull back out as a way to reference of your personal accomplishments and stuff. And so each of these races, when you talk about your first 5K, 10K, and all these different 34 miler and all those, you actually can remember them and you actually appreciate those different experiences as different cookies out of the cookie jar. I mean, when you gave the date that it was February 9th for your first 5K, I think you said February 9th in 2014, like, right. I have no clue what my first 10K was. I mean, just remember, it was a big deal for me.
I'm like, I think I started running in one of these years.
You're right. I mean, I know my first marathon year, it was a December, you know, year and just a year and month, but I don't know, I have no clue the day. And so you have grabbed hold of those memories as things that meant a lot to you and you've held on to them, which I think is great. And I think it's what continues to kind of keep you connected to something that you love a lot.
Well, and so you talked about the hard, and we're about to get into that because we talked about in the intro kind of what you're after this year. But it's interesting, man, and I think you just confirmed it for me. So, you know, we had Howie Stern on the show, and it became very apparent that he was just such a sentimental guy, and he was very similar. He remembered these experiences, and he did things for the experience, not really for the accomplishment, right? He liked some of the competition. But we were scrolling through, and I remember you had a post, and it was like a picture of your legs hanging over a rock. And it even said, like, hey, as I'm looking over, thinking about the people that hiked this up and sat right here. And I was like, okay, this has echoes of what we saw with Howie and very sentimental. I totally agree. The way you talk about dates, the way that you're like, hey, I want to appreciate doing something hard at this distance so that I can remember it'll be my first It's very interesting. I think it gives some insight probably into some of the discussions we have, but does that feel on to you? Like, does that sound right?
Yeah, I like to, especially when I achieve certain goals or get to certain places that are a dream of myself and for so many equally in this sport, I like to really reflect and take in what that means to me. I don't like to just, you know, okay, I did this, now what? What's next? What's bigger? What's better? What's the next thing? How can I top that? I never really had the mentality of wanting to top each of those milestones as much as it was really reflecting and appreciating what it was to be as a finisher of that distance.
Super interesting. I think that is a take-home point that if any of us, I'm a listener at this point to what you're saying. You know, I often will run a race and I'm like, okay, what's the next thing on my calendar? What's the next thing on my calendar? And I use these different races just as stepping stones along my calendar because I love the process of training. But I don't reflect on the actual race as much. I'm more looking for the next process of training, getting to the next event, if you will, because I like that whole arc. But I don't spend enough time camped out reflecting on that event beyond, did it go well? What did I learn from it? I will evaluate positives and negatives of it, and I will incorporate things to my personal training. But it's almost from a tactical standpoint and not a reflective, grateful standpoint that it should be to some degree. So that, I think, is a point that for everybody who's listening is to really slow down after you've completed an event, because all of us who've done any of these things have done something incredibly difficult for ourselves, right? And when we do that, we should take note of that and take stock of the experience and be a little bit more appreciative of ourselves and what we went through and reflecting on the entire experience. That's what I think. I mean, that's what I'm taking home personally for it.
You're building quite the life resume. Uh-huh. And I know that we're doing a lot of talking, but I think it's interesting because we had conversations prior about kind of what we thought was some of the drivers, right? But because there's people that do a lot, dude, you do a lot. You're always out doing something. There's people that do a lot to check the box. I'm not even going to say do it for the gram, right? But to check the box and see how much they can kind of accomplish. And that was one of the things. So I was like, dude, I think you just really enjoy living life that way and doing the experience, not so you could say, oh, I did all this stuff, but because my guess is that's just how you think life should be lived.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the amount of activities, what I do as like what's logged on Strava, because I usually log on my activities, but the amount of stuff that I do and the amount of stuff that I actually post about and write about are like, there's a huge imbalance of differences here, because for one, it takes me forever to write things to go from my head to some published post on a piece of paper or, you know, online somewhere. But I also think it's like not everything is necessarily meant to be shared in such vivid detail or like, as mentioned with that view on the rock. I mean, I was sitting there for several minutes and just taking it all in. But sometimes I feel like those moments are for me, and it's kind of difficult to bring myself to share that with others. I mean, I know how much it means to others when they read that and they find motivation out of it, but that whole process of trying to evaluate it internally to make it external is sometimes pretty difficult for me. So I tend not to post a whole lot about things, but when I do, they're like exceptionally meaningful to me, and I'd like to share that.
So let's talk. I think that gives a lot of kind of foundation into maybe why you do some of the things you do. Let's talk about the journey to find the hardest 50K in the country. So you already kind of talked about this is something you've been drawn to, right? Is hard. How did this idea come about specifically?
I don't remember, now you put me on the spot, about years and dates, but I don't remember exactly the first year I did the Quest for the Crest 10K. It was quoted like was and still is the hardest 10K in North America or the country or whatever the slogan is. And I wasn't necessarily like a full-on trail runner at the time. I definitely had not ever done anything longer than a marathon. But that race took me longer than my slowest ever half marathon for like the 10K. And at first I was like, you know, this is kind of crazy, but it's kind of neat too. Like without the context, not knowing anything about the race, when you say, oh yeah, like a 2 hour and 20 minute 10K, like what's wrong with you? But I don't sometimes need to prove myself to give the details of that race, because I know that's a pretty good time for that race. You know, it's like, I know what went into that race. I know the effort that had, that was involved to get from one side of the mountain to the top of the mountain, back to the other side of the mountain. And so as I kind of progressed in my running, it became like, you know, a kind of a goal to just to challenge myself. And like I mentioned earlier, I didn't necessarily want to skip over all of these new distances and new experiences along the way. But, you know, there's a saying like, the more you work for something, the more memorable it becomes. And I'm not saying like flat, fast courses are easy. I mean, they're hard in their own rights because you're forced to run more of them. But earlier on, when I developed my love and passion for the mountains, that's where I just wanted to be. And oftentimes the best races that I wanted to do were the hardest ones, because those were the places that I wanted to go and spend my time. So yeah, it was just always a thing of wanting to do. It's like, oh, this race has this much gain. Can I do that? It's only 35 miles. It's only, you know, 4 more miles than I've ever gone. Surely I could do that, right? You know, there's an incentive because the distance was only a marginal amount longer than I had ever been. But the challenge was, oh, this actually might be vastly more difficult than anything else I've ever done. But again, it's only 4 more miles. So how hard can it be? And so that kind of just progressed its way all the way up. I've done now Quest for the Crest 50K, which is one of the hardest 50Ks. This year will be my 5th year doing the 50K, in addition to that 10K for the first year. And that just got me thinking, like, what else is there out there that is this difficult over just that distance? Because yes, 50 milers are hard. Yes, 100Ks are hard. Yes, of course, 100 milers are hard. But mile for mile, a lot of times 100 milers that get you some easier terrain in the middle. Quest and, you know, we touched on Speed Goat and Barkley, and honestly, a race that kind of escaped my radar, it's not as well known, as Cold Rock 50K, hosted by Dirty Wolf Racing. That happened, I think, last week, actually. I was busy. I couldn't actually end up making it, but that's another race that's kind of on my calendar, just because it's like, that is a very difficult race over just 31 miles. So it just brings a new aspect of difficult over just a certain distance.
So is it difficulty or distance that you are enjoying more, or that you are drawn to more?
I like the distance, but because I do so many different activities, it's way more difficult to train for those distances, at least beyond 50 miles. I'm honestly struggling a little bit right now with training for GDR, because, you know, in the back of my mind, it's like, this is going to be an extremely tough race. And on one hand, it's like, have I done enough? I was doing a lot of stuff at the beginning of the year, but between travel and other activities, it's kind of slacked off a little bit the past couple weeks. So I like challenging myself more over the terrain in a shorter distance, because I can usually achieve those with not as much training as would be involved for like 100 milers. And then, of course, the recovery time and the rebound after those races that I've learned to do is much quicker.
So of the three that we know that you've got signed up for already, that are on UltraSign, if you've got Quest for the Crest, Speed Goat, and Barkley, those three you've definitely signed up for already, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of those three, which do you think is going to be the most challenging?
So I've been toying around with this in my head a lot. As I mentioned, Quest I'm the most familiar with. I've done 4 times now. And it hasn't always been the original course or the course that it is now. Mm-hmm. 2 of those runnings of the Quest 50K were the COVID years, that there was like no shuttle 1 year and no Mitchell Summit 1 year. So it was kind of wonky in terms of the elevation that's generally quoted for that distance. So Quest is hard, but it's the one I'm most familiar with. So the one I'm sort of least worried about, even though it's up there with the absolute hardest. Speed Goat, by numbers, is very similar to Quest. It's got like 30, 233 miles, almost 12,000 feet of climbing. I know what that feels like. I know how long Quest takes me. The worries about Speed Goat is elevation. I've never done any running event at elevation. I think it tops at like 11,200 feet. The only times I've been up that high, I've been skiing. So you take the lift up and you have fun skiing down. So I don't know what it means to climb a mountain at that, you know, altitude. So there's definitely some uncertainty there. And then Barkley, I mean, if you know anything about Barkley, it's like, you can't possibly say, oh, Barkley's the easiest of the three, because it's Barkley. There's like off trail, it's summertime, it's hot, there's briars, it's off, some of it's off trail. The DNF rate for Barkley is, I think, higher than Quest and Speed Goat. So that's worrisome too. There's no GPS. There's no actual knowing what that course is like. I've also never been out to that part of Tennessee. So unless I go out there sometime during the summer just to try some of the, of course, on-trail public access parts of the course, I'm going into that blind as well, just like Speed Goat. So I really don't know which one is the hardest. And that's why I was like, well, let's just sign up for all three of them and figure it out. There is also the rut in Montana that I've heard of being a very difficult, high altitude, above tree line, scree fields type of race. I couldn't add that to my calendar this year. I think it's September and too close to Barkley, if I looked at the dates correct when I did. But maybe next year I'll figure, you know, which of those four races, or now five with Cold Rock, like which is the hardest 50K.
Yeah, we added the rut into our notes too to tell you about in case you didn't have that on your list. Yeah, because we looked it up as well. For those that don't know, the Rut 50K is in Montana, and it's only got 10,500 feet of elevation gain total, but 3,000 feet of that gain is at mile 18. And that's just where 3,000 feet of gain is, in the middle of the freaking race. And it's just straight up. And then apparently it's almost straight down on the backside, and you slide down. I don't know what the surface is called. They call it like ski rock or something,
scree.
Like scree.
Scree.
And so they say it's super difficult because of the slope is so much on each of them. Can't imagine the grade.
So my recommendation for Barkley is, if nobody else is taking the left or the right to go to the marathon, just go win that thing.
You can win the marathon.
Oh my goodness.
Are you familiar with that or no?
So if you, there's a split at the top of one of the climbs where you could take, they call it, I think, Quitter's Road or something. You could go left and finish up on a fire road downhill.
That's right.
To achieve the marathon.
Yeah, but you can ask them, if they'll tell you if you're the first person to get there to win the marathon.
And you get 100% on Ultra sign up, you know, so that came from the man himself.
We talked to Laz about it. And he's like,
oh my goodness.
He goes, and people take it. I was like, oh yeah, that'd be pretty tempting to say I won my first marathon.
But then you have to spend the whole year knowing that you didn't go after
it. Yeah, they give everybody crap who does it though. So yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'll be even first up to that split point. So I'm kind of hoping I'm not, so I don't have a tough decision to make, you know?
Well, it's just the first to take that option, right? You could be 10th, but if everybody else went for the 50K, that's up to you.
But no, the answer is no.
The answer is no. You're going after that 50K.
So one last question I have, just trying to get a little bit more of your personality on this and your pursuit of these types of events. And we talked just, and it kind of, I thought about it because of the whole discussion on the Barkley Marathon just now about you have the chance to be first at the marathon. Do you care about placement?
I care about the experience. I care to do well, to challenge myself to do well. Like I don't know if we'll talk at all about the Beast of the East 50 miler, but my goals were time related, just internal. Like I wanted personally to run sub 12 hours on the course, not initially knowing that the course was going to be a little bit harder or a little bit different than the previous years, just based off of the start location and the course layout and all that. That didn't really deter me from wanting 12 hours. I didn't realize at the time that 12 hours would almost, at least looking at past results, almost always guarantee or almost always resulted in a top 10 finish. That part was kind of unsettling for me because I'd never done that type of placement before, but I knew the course and I knew what I wanted to do. And so I set that limit of 12 hours and I didn't really care who left the gate before I did or who was on the course that was ahead of me. I was just basing my time and effort off of 12 hours. And finishing under 12 hours was the main goal. The fact that I also got under, top 10, that was just an added bonus. Mm-hmm. So yes, I care about placement in a sense, but it's more of like, what do I think I can do on the course, challenging myself against myself, because different years, different people, different races, different fields bring different competitiveness. And again, for like GDR, I'm thinking hopefully maybe 18 to 20 hours. I don't care really about placement or where I fall within the top field. It's just like, what do I think I can do on the course? Let's set out to achieve it. And if I do, great. And if I don't, how can I change it for next time?
Well, and that's thinking about what you can control, right? What you can put a plan together for. You can't plan who shows up and you can't plan how they train and whether they're faster or slower or any of that, but you can plan for the things that you're saying, right? Hey, what goals can I set? What do I think I can accomplish? But this goes into one of the things when we emailed was, and you just mentioned, so one, we're talking about races like Barkley, right? That do have a higher DNF rate. You have to date, you do not have any DNFs that have claimed any of your races. However, you even just said, if I do meet my goal, great. If not, what can I learn? And one of the things that you talked about is failure versus dissatisfaction. And it wasn't your words. You didn't say, I don't believe in failure, but essentially the words around it kind of said, hey, I call it dissatisfaction rather than failure. Talk us through that.
Right. So I hear a lot of times people say like, oh, I didn't succeed at this race. You don't necessarily hear it like, oh, I failed at this race. You hear it in the terms of what they define success as, like, oh, I didn't meet my goals, I failed, or I didn't succeed, or, you know. And for me, it's like, there hasn't ever been a race that I've run that I didn't succeed at. Because I think it's important to realize, like, unless you don't learn anything from the event, or you just do the event and you toss it off, that memory into the abyss, and don't take anything from that experience with you. If you decide like, okay, I'm going to go into this race, I'm going to set a goal. If I achieve the goal, that will be successful. But if I don't achieve the goal, the success from that race comes from what have you learned from the experience. So a lot of times, like in training or just after long events, you know, I ask people, what did you learn from the day? Like, how did that benefit you in the long run? Because if you can't pull anything from past experiences to help you moving forward into the next ones, you can't really progress in that fashion. And a lot of times we spend, or all the time, right? We spend so much time training for this event, for getting ourselves ready for the event. And any number, especially in ultra running, any number of things can go wrong or can pop up. Like the weather can change, your stomach can change, like all these crazy things can change that can put you at a different spot than what you thought your training and your preparation led you up to the event. And to have the mentality of, oh, well, this race has just gone to crap, I'm going to give up, like I don't care about it anymore, like that doesn't help you at all. If you're in the race and something's going wrong, you have the decision to make, am I going to fight with this? Am I going to see what I can do to turn this around? How am I going to fix what I can't control with what I can control? And then by the end, you put all the pieces back together, whether you finish or not. Because again, whether or not you finish is still not what I would consider success. You can DNF a race and still have it be one of your most successful events. Because in my opinion, if you don't finish, you would have learned the most from that event. You touched on the base that I haven't yet DNF'd a race, and not that I ever want to specifically per se, but I tell people all the time, it's like, I kind of can't wait for that to happen, because I know that whatever that it comes to, whether I time out of a timed cutoff or hopefully not. I could develop an injury or I hurt myself along the way. Whatever it comes to that I can't finish the event that I started off doing, in that moment of deciding, should I continue or should I not continue, there will be so many different thought processes going through my head. And I've not yet ever been there. And so I don't exactly know what that would be like. And I think it'd be interesting to dive into that aspect of ultra running. There's definitely been some really low moments in my racing and times that I didn't necessarily think I could pull it together, but I always have. And so I don't ever have that experience of, okay, this is it. I'm calling it. And then we're going to sit back, think about how do I avoid that again in the future. So I think if more people came into the event knowing, hey, I'm here, I'm at the starting line, I put in all the work, all of the discipline, all the training that I have to get up to this point, that is already success. The race even isn't defined by, or your success in the event isn't even defined by the event. It's your preparation leading up to it. So I kind of wish more people would just like accept that. And even if they don't finish, say, hey, this is what I achieved, but this is not what I'm satisfied with. So let's try again. Let's take what I've learned. Let's put it towards the next year's event or just other events down the road.
So when you're in that moment where you are trying, you kind of said you've had some low moments, but you haven't really been in this I'm going to stop or not stop type experience yet in a race. Is that correct? Is that how you said that?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah. So since you do mountain runs and you do these high elevation type of ultras stuff, you've got to be like tapped out at different points. Like your legs have got to feel like they just don't want to keep moving forward. How do you mentally keep moving forward when your legs don't want to?
So it's different when I'm on a training run versus in a race environment. In a training run, I will definitely have the discipline to call it short based off of how my legs are feeling. If it's an off day, if I'm completely dehydrated because I didn't pack enough water or the streams weren't flowing enough to filter, for the safety and longevity of my running, I will call it and say, okay, this is just not worth the amount that I would have to go through to finish it. But during a race environment, if there's time on the clock, then I will do whatever I can to keep going using the volunteers and the energy from my friends and family that are supporting me to get through those problems, because we rely so much on each other to get through difficult moments that when I'm by myself in training and those resources aren't as readily available, it's more worth it to me just to, you know, sort of cut the losses of whatever I had set out to do that day, again, for the longevity of continuing to train for the race I'm preparing for. But to be able to draw the energy from everyone else in the race, the volunteers, your crew, your fellow racers, that's when the puzzle pieces of how to assemble a broken puzzle come together to get back to the finish.
So one of the things that we talked about is your connection with community, right? And just the way you just talked about other people and their energy and how that's help you through. I do want to transition to community. One of the things that I want to touch on quick is I actually really like, and it hit me as you were talking, I really like your word of dissatisfaction, because I kept thinking, okay, so it's easy to call everything a success. Right. Oh, success is based off of whether I learned. Does that mean that anything is good enough? Right. But when you said, well, no, I can be dissatisfied with it. I may not be satisfied with the effort. That's not the trophy for everybody kind of mentality. That, right. That's the no. I'm going to review it. I'm not going to let myself off the hook, but that doesn't mean that it's a failure. I can take these things and I can still be successful in how I move forward. And so I really like that aspect. And I just wanted to kind of touch on it again, because that's how we led into it. But I think that's super, super cool. I'm going to challenge myself to think about it that way. So thank you for that. But all right, man. So community, you talked about, I mean, really getting started with the Raleigh Trail Runners was a big part for you, right? That's what got you on the trails. You've been very active in the Tough Runners. You seem to be connected everywhere. We can touch on the story I got to witness with Adrian, and there's something cool that just happened with your new buddy, Francisco. But what does community mean to you, and how has that given you, I mean, not only energy in the race, but just energy in general, you know, in these experiences?
Right. So even those days where you don't feel as motivated to go out, or you don't have the self-discipline to put in the long miles, having friends who go out there and do it on like a top level surface of community, it's nice to be engulfed in such a spot where you like just today, actually, a good friend of mine invited me out to do, I think he's doing like 20 something miles in Umstead, training for the Umstead 100. And where my mind was at when he asked me, I said, oh, well, my legs have been sort of dealing with something small this past week, so I'll think about it. And if anything, I'll just show up to start and just not do the whole 20 something miles with you. And then I realized, oh, I have this recording with you tonight, so I can't do that. So being able to have so many friends and so many people that are training and doing so many miles that invite you out for that community of training is really nice, to be able to just say, okay, well, I'll come out, I'll see how I feel. Hopefully I can join you for everything. If not, I'll tailor it to more of my needs. So that's more of just like the surface level, getting out the door. It's cold, it's raining, it's hot. Like, all these people are doing it, so I should do it too. But on like a deeper level, when that feeling when you do connect with somebody, as you mentioned about Francisco, there's been so many other people that either know me through my YouTube channel or just through the wide array of friends that I have built up over the last couple of years. Knowing that you're a part of something is just so incredibly grateful, to have so many people that call you in their circle. As I touched on before, you know, we rely on each other to get us through these toughest moments. And when you share those deepest, hardest, lowest of lows moments with people that you've either known for a while or have just met at that time, that connectivity of you and the other person is so much more profound than what you would typically find, or a friend that you've known from school for like 10 years. A lot of times, like, we write or we reflect on the times that we suffer in these races or it's painful, but there's, you know, 1,000 places I would rather be than tired and at a low point in a race, knowing that there's more people behind me that are going to come up on me, and there's more people ahead of me at other aid stations that will help me. It's like I'm always doing what I love in a place that I love and with people that I love, and having that sense of bond between everybody, that when you're hurting and your race is not going the way you had planned it to, knowing that people can just jump in and lend a helping hand is really nice. And then to be able to do that for other people is just equally as satisfying.
Yeah. So we have the curse of knowledge, because we know a little bit about some of the stories that we've touched on briefly. But, you know, when we first started talking about community here for everybody who's listening, we talked about how community was, you mentioned community was very helpful for you to get out the door. You know, when people are doing hard things, they would motivate you to come and be a part of it. But then you kind of just progressed here a little bit more to your experiences within races and being a part of races with other runners who are going through a very similar thing as well. And one of the things that has stood out to me and to Jeremy about you is the giving of yourself in those moments as well. And so just, we said his name, we said Francisco. I ran the URI marathon as well. I saw you running with this guy who I figured was a friend of yours. But for those listening, can you tell everybody about this young man named Francisco that you met that morning?
I would call it that he met me, and it was just by accident. So I've done the URI marathon maybe 3 times. I don't remember. I have to look back at the records, but I've been there where it's hot. I've been there where it's raining, where it's flooded. Like, I've been training on that course. I know that course. That's where I ran my 100 miler. So I know you worry. And my goals for that day at that race were just to go out easy training miles. So I park and I get there, and I was a little bit behind where I had wanted to be in terms of the timing of getting there with having the race started in like 10 or 15 minutes. Anyway, so Francisco, he was just conveniently, coincidentally parked next to me. He comes up and he says, excuse me, if I'm going to be running this thing, do I need to have like book bags like everyone else does? Like he was talking about the, you know, the hydration packs, the fuel belts that we have. And I was like, one, already in sort of a frantic mindset because I was trying to pack my pack ready. I was trying to run to the bathroom. I was trying to check in. I had only 10 minutes and it was all kind of high energy at that moment. And when I saw him and he was in a t-shirt, he'd had no jacket. He was shivering because it was a little chilly that morning. And all he had was a little pack with like three Nutri-Grain bars. And I was like, what in the world? What's happening right now? So I always pack a lot of extra stuff. I had extra gels, extra food, extra water bottle in my car. And so when I asked if he had any way to carry water and he said no, I was like, here, take this. This is my bottle. Take some of these spring gels. I had three flavors. I gave him one of each. I said, try these. You might not like them, but they're really good for you in case you need them. And I asked him, I said, what's your longest run? And he goes, 18 miles. And I said, okay, what's your longest run by time? And this is what I ask a lot of my friends too when they're getting into the ultra distances. It's like, it doesn't matter as much that you've gone 18 miles, but he had said he's only gone like 2.5 hours. So he's a fast little kid, but he's got no idea of what trail running means. And so I told him, I was like, all right, well, this is going to be likely between 5 to 6 hours plus. So don't think of it as just 8 more miles. And again, this goes back to my mentality of, oh, 30 miles to 35 miles to 40 miles. It's like, yes, it is only a couple more miles, but the difficulty is going to make so much longer time to where your nutrition needs to be more dialed in, your longevity of duration of running and walking needs to be more dialed in. So anyway, so we start the race. He was thankful of the bottle I gave him and the few gels. And he caught up to me within the first mile or so. And knowing you worry, the first 2 miles are all pretty runnable. It's like the easiest part of the course. And I kind of mentioned to him, I said, so, you know, again, just be mindful of the energy output at this point, because these are the easiest of the miles, but there's several miles in the middle and the back half of this course that you're crawling up mountains, you're using your hand, it's super steep, you're reduced to a hike. And I said, because it's been raining, it's probably going to be super muddy and flooded, just again, because I have so much knowledge of the course. And he says, okay. So he just kind of tucked in behind me and I was doing my own plan. I was doing what I had set out for that day. Mostly easy zone 2 based off of heart rate. So I was going super slow on the climbs, keeping my heart rate low. I was able to run pretty quick on the downhills because my heart rate was staying within the zones. And no matter how fast I ran on the downhills and no matter how slow I went on the uphills, Francisco was like always right behind me. Also, I should point out, he was not in anything aggressive trail shoe related. He was wearing some Nike road running shoe on a wet, muddy, rocky, slick course and keeping up with me on pretty technical, fast descents. So it was pretty wild. So throughout the whole course, I was talking to him about, okay, so we have this far to the next aid station. And he was able to just compartmentalize, all right, so just 3 miles here. I said, these are the next couple miles are the easiest miles. These next miles are going to be super hard. So take it easy. One thing I did want to point out that I didn't actually write about, but after leaving the second aid station, I stepped into a giant mud puddle. This has never happened to me in the thousands of miles I've ever run, but I happened to splash like thick crap mud all into my eyes and mouth and face. And I couldn't see anything. My eyes were completely burning. It took several minutes for me to be able to see again. I had to stop completely. Well, Francisco, as being right behind me, just immediately jumped in and with the same bottle that I gave him at the start of the race that he had just filled up at the aid station that I sort of had to keep reminding him, make sure you fill your bottle, make sure you take some food, make sure you prepare for this next section, right? He was spraying out my eyes of the mud, trying to make it to where I could see again. And so I was wiping my eyes out with my shirt. He was spraying some more of the water because I had some other liquid nutrition in my bottles. And so, you know, I had spoken about being able to give and being able to accept. It's like, you know, in that moment, I thought it was just really special to be receiving help from somebody who I helped to get to that point. It's like, well, if I had never given him the bottle, or if he had never taken that advice to stay with me and stay behind me, we wouldn't have been in that moment to where he could help me and spray out my eyes and clear all the mud out. Because honestly, if he wasn't there, I would have probably had to go backwards on the course to the aid station to get my eyes sorted out, to get, like, spray them out with water. So he had asked me, if we stay at my pace, what would we finish the race in? So I looked at my time, I looked at the distance, and I said, well, 5.5 hours would be pretty tight. I don't think we'll do that, but probably between 5:30 and 5:45 at the most. After we left the last aid station, he asked me, he goes, if I still feel good, when should I push to run faster? Because I told him the whole time, I was like, if you want to go faster after we hit like 18 or 20 miles, like, don't let me slow you down. This is your race. Like, I didn't care if, like, he beat me by pace, or I didn't care about any of that. And so I had mentioned, like, okay, well, we get to the last aid station. It's a big downhill. You go by the water. There's one more big uphill, one more big downhill, and then 2.5 miles of nonsense, and then you're done. So I had mentioned to him, if you feel good, I gave him the last gel. I should make sure you eat this. If you feel good, go for it. Try to run under 5.5. And he had since now well surpassed his longest time of running, well surpassed his longest distance, but was definitely succumbing to the effects of the day. And while I was maintaining my effort pretty evenly, it was becoming more and more difficult for him to stay at that same consistent level of effort. So he never ended up passing. But what ended up happening towards the end is, it sort of was like I was pacing him. He was really struggling to keep up with me and stay with me as we passed a couple of other people towards the end. And then I had mentioned to him the last trail marker. Like, there's a big bridge, there's 2.6 miles, there's this landmark, and there's a power line clearing. At the power line clearing, that is 0.2 miles from the end. When you get there, go, give it your best shot. You got this. And so when we got there again together. He was trying to keep up, and there was like one or two more people just ahead of us. And so I gave him that last final motivation to push, and we both took off and we both sprinted into the finish. We exchanged phone numbers, chatted a little bit the next couple of days. I asked him, how does he feel? And he had told me the next day, or he said, those were some of the toughest 5.5 hours he had ever felt before. And so it just felt really good to give him that taste of what trail running is, and to, you know, show him how we do things, when to hike, when to run, when to eat, when to refuel, because I know this definitely won't be his last because of how much he enjoyed it. So to be able to, like, implant that motivation to somebody. I also don't know if I mentioned, but he's only 18 years old. So he's 10 years younger than I am, and plenty of experience already at such a young age to do what he did at that course in those conditions and in those shoes. So I'm excited to see, like, where he takes it and if he continues trail running.
The only thing that would have made me like that story more is if, when you got the mud in your eyes, he took off and beat you by like 10 minutes.
That would be a bad story.
He was like,
suck yep.
All right, so long.
Yeah. I didn't wait for that to happen.
Just kidding. Dude, I think, so one, obviously, it's like, dude, it was fate that you were there. That guy, it sounds like, you know, he would have been lost. I love the fact that he's 18. He called it a book bag. You know, that makes the most sense, right? It just shows how foreign the whole situation was to him. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you were able to make that kind of impact and do that had to be super rewarding. I saw, I mean, different but the same at Southern Tour. Just for everybody quick, I mentioned Adrian. So you were there to run your relay. You ran 25 miles, half a relay, a 50-mile relay, and then took it upon yourself because you were already going to be sleeping in a sleeping bag in 18-degree weather, you know, camping, to essentially be the sole crew for Adrian Cooper, who ended up running a 30-hour last man. So you were up all hours of the night. You were running back and forth. You were helping this guy out. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, Scott is built pretty different, man. And I will say this. When I saw you, you were enjoying yourself. It wasn't something where you're like, oh, I guess this is what I'm doing now. But I remember thinking, all right, Scott's got a heart of gold. So I'll say we want to talk Georgia Death Race, but I want to take you quick, and we'll be quick about this, but you are a 2022. There was a statement that you made. So obviously you touched on, hey, you've been in some pretty deep moments. Here's what I think was pretty neat about you, Ari, is the year prior, you had paced our previous guest, Carlita Farmer, and we heard her story about her last lap and you helping her get through that. And it was a pretty brutal lap.
Well, but he wasn't originally planning to be her pacer.
Even in that one, you stepped in, right?
Yeah, he stepped in as her pacer.
Right. Yeah. So in,
it wasn't her pacer.
Yeah. In typical Scott fashion, says, oh, yeah. Hey, let me help. You get to experience that with her. Well, now the next year you are 2022. I want you to take us to your last lap, because here's the quote that I think was interesting, and I want to hear how it plays into this. But you said, I learned what you think you have left and what you actually have left are so far apart from each other. And that was about that race. So set the scene for us in that last lap. You got Carlita there. It sounds like you weren't sure how things were going to go. How did you end up learning that lesson?
Yeah, so just ahead of my lap five, it's five laps of 20 miles, give or take. I had made the comment to my friends and family. I said, I'm so ready to be done, but I'm so glad I'm not done yet, because I was not yet finished. And so at the time, my watch also had completely died. So that was a whole nother issue. I had no idea really what time it was or what pace I was at. But we started off, Carlita and I, for lap five, and it was like super special because I knew exactly what was going on the year prior. Carlita and I had never met before me pacing her. And this goes back to meeting somebody in their absolute lowest of lows. Like, you meet just the shell of the person, and it's your obligation and duty to get them to the finish line. And so I succeeded at that by fingernails and time left on the clock. And after she finished, I completely broke down because it was so much of an effort of my part to get her to the finish line before the cutoff. And so I couldn't think of a better way to honor that experience, to invite her back to pace me at the same race. It was her first 100, which is crazy at URI to pick something that difficult. It was my first 100. So she paced me lap five. And so we started off, I didn't really know how little time I had left. And by the time we got to the last aid station, I basically was told I didn't have time to stop and to just go. And so that was kind of unsettling. I was like, oh man, because again, my watch was completely dead for this whole lap. And I was asking Carlita, I was like, are we going to finish? Like, are we doing okay on time? And she kind of modestly says, well, you could always be going faster. I was like, oh man. So speaking back to that bridge, that 2.6 mile bridge, I had mentioned, I said, well, we need to get to this bridge by 5 o'clock with 1 hour remaining, because I was well behind the cutoff at that point. I was doing 25 minute miles and still with 2.5 miles left in less than an hour, because when we got to the bridge, it was 5:07. I had 43 minutes left for 2.6 miles, doing on average the last 25 minute mile pace. And I stopped on the bridge and I asked her, I said, are you ready to run? And I gave her a fist bump with my right hand and punched the crap out of a tree with my left hand and took off running and ended up finishing that race in DFL position, dead last, with barely even, not even like just over 20 minutes left on the clock, meaning I had basically sprinted that, you know, last 2.5 miles. I've recently gone back to do like a time trial on that last 2.6 miles. And on a fresh legs doing only 10 miles that day, I was only 4 minutes faster at mile 10 on fresh legs and fresh energy than I was at mile 100 of a 102-mile race to finish that race in time. So to give all that I can give to help somebody finish that race, and honestly, when I paced her at that 100, I had still at that point zero intention of wanting to do a 100-mile race. Not that I was scared to try it. It was just like, you know, that's something other people did. I was happy to give my services and support to get them through the finish line. Like, that was exciting to me. But when I officially made the decision to do a 100-miler and to do that 100-miler, it was just like the ending of a story tale finish to have her there pacing me as the last place finisher. So that was super special. So if Carlita ends up watching this, thank you so much. And since then, our relationship has just grown so strong, much, much stronger than I had than it was over the last 2 years. We've done several races together. She often does the 100-mile distance. I often do the 50-mile distance. But whatever we do, it's always a fun time to hang out. I've paced her and her husband, Damarian, many times. So it's just super special to be, again, involved in such a community where people are so willing to help you out and you have the opportunity to exchange the favor and to help them out.
I've met Carlita. Obviously, we had her on the podcast. I met her at a race too. It was Beast of the East 1 year, and she is a phenomenal human being. Phenomenal human being. Yeah. Good people.
How neat is it though that you guys got to do that for each other a year apart? Like, that's just so cool.
It's good karma, man. Good karma. Really good karma. Yep. GDR.
Yeah. All right. So Georgia Death Race, you mentioned, I called it grueling. So quick, my guess is most people have heard of it, but quick overview. So you mentioned already 74-ish miles, 16,000 feet of gain and descent. I've heard just some gnarly things about it in terms of the terrain. And on the website, it says it's the craziest and most fun east of the Rockies, most fun race east of the Rockies. It's got a 60% finisher rate. And one thing that's unique about it is you're required to carry a 1-pound railroad spike the entire duration of the race. So obviously, you mentioned it's right now 10 days away. It's going to be the second longest. I'm interested, man. You mentioned, I think you said 17 to 19 hours, somewhere in there.
18 to 20.
18 to 20. Okay, so 18 to 20. What are your biggest concerns going into GDR with all the experience that you have? Because you've got a lot.
Ooh, biggest concerns. So I know how to deal with the rain and the mud, you know, at URI and at some other races I've done. The distance is, again, concerning me because I've done 50 miles a handful of times. I've done one 100-miler, but I have not actually ever raced 100K. And this is a little bit longer than that. And knowing what it took to do URI in those 100 miles and knowing what that felt like, it's just daunting to go, you know, I'm imagining like 25 miles further than Beast of the East 50. That was this past December. The magnitude of what we do when you sit back and think about it, like, it is just astronomical. The spike, I'm not super worried about because I've done self-supported 50Ks before. Like, I've run with heavy packs. Figuring out how to get it comfortable might be an issue. But in terms of gnarly technical ascents and descents, I'm pretty comfortable on the back half of the course. And I've never been out that way. So I'm going into this one like without any experience on those trails, which is also kind of scary because a lot of the big races that I've done, like URI or Beast or those races that I've done well, I've known the course. So not knowing the course is scary. But from what I've heard, the back half is more runnable per se. I don't know if I'm just making this stuff up, but there's more roads, there's less technical terrain. And from what I've heard from friends who have done it, you should be able to run those sections. So I'm worried about the first 50K, the first 25, 30 miles up until one of the big aid stations where it's supposed to be the most difficult of the race, I've never really had to convert between a gnarly, crazy mountain race and then more bridle roads that I would train on maybe in Umpstead Park that are longer uphills and to run those. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited. I have to do more homework in terms of figuring out my aid stations and drop bags and all that stuff, but I'm excited to see what the course is like and what I can do.
Yeah. So I was just going to ask a quick question. So you mentioned earlier that for all of your races, you know, you're looking for something that you learned or some take-home point from each of them. You kind of touched on this already a little bit with how you talked about what your concerns are going into the race. Are there any lessons that you have learned from your previous race experiences that you think set you up well to be successful or very satisfied, if you will, at GDR?
Yeah. So GDR, again, is notorious for being like cold, wet, and raining in the morning, hot, humid, muggy during the day, and then freezing cold again at night. And I've been in many positions. My first 50 miler, I was collapsed with 20 something miles to go again on a big exposed bridle road, similar to what I'm expecting the back half of GDR to be like. And again, being helped by somebody to the next aid station and getting myself better to continue into the sunset, into the evening. So I have those experiences to pull from. Uwari just a few weeks ago, being able to run in not super cold, but you know, chilly, cold, rain, mud. So the more environments you can immerse yourself in, the more experiences you can pull from and figure out what works well, what worked, what didn't work at all. And so there's just a lot of different tools in the toolbox per se to pull from to race that one.
Yeah, I think that's an important point because a lot of people will get into an experience like that and they will panic because they're not sure what to do in that moment because they've never experienced something like that. And I think when you have had put yourself in training or through different smaller events or different events that you've either been a pacer or a crew or a volunteer or even run yourself and been in, you're able to draw back from those experiences to be more familiar with the discomfort that I do think will help you in a race like GDR.
And just the variety of the things that you do. I mean, again, so scanning through, I know that shortly after Southern Tour, you did like a mountain summit, I think Mount Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
Summit in just terrible weather. And there were some super cool pictures that came out of it, but clearly you're not a stranger to putting yourself in tough conditions and even outside of race environments, right? Just willingly like, hey, this is what we're going to go do today. So I'm excited to see how that plays out. I'm definitely excited to see how the 50Ks play out throughout the year. And you'll have to get back to us on which one you do believe is the hardest, knowing that there's maybe a couple you won't get to this year. But for everybody that's listening and wants to go follow us, we'll put this in the notes, but it's at Scott with three T's. So at Scott.Perry on Instagram. Then you've also got the YouTube channel you mentioned. It's at Scott Runs and Stuff. And so we'll post those. But are those the best places for people to kind of follow, get in touch with you?
Yeah, that's where most things are published, public at least. And then I do have a running blog. I'm not super active on that, but when I do have a neat experience, I'll try to write up a post about it on that as well.
And if you're in the Raleigh area of North Carolina, you should join the Tough Runners Run Club. I think you are one of the admins of that run club. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was fortunate to be able to sort of kick that off with a couple of good friends. And now that it's grown to, I think we're over 500 members at this point, it's hard to be involved with all of the different aspects surrounding that. But yeah, if you're in the Raleigh area, Tough is really great. RTR, Raleigh Trail Runners, which got me into trail running, is also a nice option if you'd like more single track, generally speaking. And yeah, just the running community around Raleigh is amazing. And if you're ever in the area, come by and say, hey.
Awesome. And it's Tough, T-U-F-F.
T-U-F-F, yep.
Well, look, man, our motto is just show up. And you show up, not only from, again, all the activities you do and just kind of the way you live life, but just also from a relational, Francisco, man, if you wouldn't have showed up for Francisco, you know, then I'm sure his day would have been much different.
And so would yours. You'd have been blind.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. I would have been able to see.
But we appreciate that about you so much. There's been so much value from this conversation. And for everybody listening, just again, thank you for taking the time. It's the same ask. If you're finding the value, please share with your friends. Let them know what you're listening to. That's huge for us. But Scott, man, just thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was awesome to be on the show and hope to see and hear more of you guys soon.
Awesome. We're going to keep you around for just a minute, do something fun with Patreon. And for everybody else, thanks again. And we will talk soon.
Cut.
Yeah, give me 1 second. Sure. I just realized my laptop has not been plugged in.
Oh.
And the battery message just said it's running low.
Okay.
No, well, we'll see you later, Scott.
Yeah.
And cut.
And he's cutting us off. Like, we have seen each other multiple times on the trails and stuff, and I've waved you and called your name out like a stalker.
Can you hear if I breathe into the mic?
Yes. And I'm not putting you on the spot.
Yes, you are.
Okay. Have you listened to the show? I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, we had Howie Stern on the show, and it became very apparent that, God, what's the word? I forgot it with him too. Sentimental. Thank you. Steve, cut that part out.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of people I know have been on this show already.
We should just start calling it the Scott's Friends series.
Scott's Spotlight.
Or we'll just put it together and like Scott's favorite episodes and just be all his friends. Yeah,
and if you've listened to any of the episodes where I don't speak a lot, it's because he's cut me out.
I just cut him out. You know, I'm like, where's more of me? How do I get more of me in it?
So just tape it to your head right there.
Okay. I'll try and not
just
move
hold
right
it,
here.
But then not breathe.
He thinks we're drunk. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.